You're listening to an extended edition of the Something Beautiful podcast. I'm Jonathan Blundell. This week on the Something Beautiful podcast, we're talking with Cameron Sinclair. He is one host of the podcast HistoryBanter.com, along with his co-host Brad Folsom. He's also an adjunct professor at Brookhaven College and several other colleges in the area. So we are excited to have him on the podcast this week. Cameron, first off, thanks for joining us on the episode.
No problem.
I think we officially met, met anywhere. I don't think we were following each other on Twitter or anything yet. Sometime last year, thanks to a mutual podcaster that we're fans of, Trip Fuller, we met at one of his meetups in the area. So glad to have you on the show now.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Not to be a jerk about it, but I'm full time now, actually.
Oh, you're a full time professor now?
Yeah.
Well, look at you, fancy.
You're new this year, so
fancy pants.
I know. It's my 10th year there, so.
Oh, okay. Well, see, next year you're going to be like, oh, I'm tenured.
Yeah. Well, I think it starts over again. When you go from adjunct to full-time, it starts over again.
Really?
So now, technically, I've only been there one semester.
Now, see, I don't know these things working at district office, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's different for y'all. So.
We don't get any of that tenured stuff.
Yeah, well, they don't do tenure for us either. It's rotating 3-year contracts. This is all really boring. No one cares about this.
It's okay. Well, we'll get that intro. He is a full time professor at Brookhaven College, as well as, are you full time elsewhere or is it adjunct?
Just there. I'm not doing teaching anywhere else anymore either.
Oh well, that's what happens when you go full time.
Well, I tried to keep my my teaching fellowship at UNT last semester, and it just murdered me. So I had to give that up.
All right. Well, that makes sense. Okay. So you teach history at Brookhaven, is that right?
I do.
And what do you teach, a specific era, or do you teach a number of different eras?
I teach basically 3 different classes. The main one that that all community colleges offer is the 2 U.S. history surveys. So the first half of U.S. history from the beginning of man up to the Civil War, through the Civil War, and then U.S. History 2, which is Reconstruction up to the present. That's what everybody teaches. That's mostly what I teach. I also sometimes teach a Mexican-American class. Mm-hmm. That one doesn't always make, but when it does, I teach it. So,
okay. So what got you interested in history to begin with? Was it a certain teacher in high school, or were you just as a kid always interested in history?
I was always interested. My aunt and uncle were also professors at East Texas Baptist University out in Marshall. So they were always, they didn't teach history, it's English, and my uncle's a baseball coach, but they were always kind of pushing me in kind of an academic direction, and my mom was real interested in history, and I just grew up being intrigued by the past and just enjoying learning stories about the past and trying to figure out what people did back then. I don't know why I don't really know why it always fascinated me, but it always has. So when I went to undergrad at Hardin-Simmons.
What, Hardin-Centers? What?
Yeah, Hardin-Centers. Hardin-Simmons in Abilene, Texas. I lost my train of thought. Oh, so
sorry.
That's
a bad podcasting etiquette there.
That's my own fault. So when I got to undergrad at Hardin-Simmons, I actually went in as a computer science major, and I had this dream that I was going to be join the army and be a cyber warrior guy, get involved in like cyber warfare and stuff like that. And I was in the ROTC program at Hardin-Simmons. As soon as I got there, though, they closed that program down. And then I realized that the direction then was to go into the business world. And I didn't really like the business world very much. So I kind of thought, well, what else can I do? And I looked at history. And my sophomore year, I changed majors and I haven't looked back.
Very cool. Now, so when you changed majors as a sophomore in college, were you thinking at that point, I'm going to be a history professor? Or were you thinking, you know, maybe I'll be an archaeologist or I'll just research or, you know, write? What was your thoughts?
No, I kind of always had my eye on the professor element of it. I mean, like I said, my aunt and uncle, I think that the life they had, I guess, or the direction what they were doing, it always appealed to me. And I had some really great professors at Hardin-Simmons. And just very quickly, I thought, you know what, this is a really good job.
Okay. Were you interested, I guess, in high school then as well? You said early on you kind of had that interest, but were you able to stay interested through high school and, I guess, junior high and so forth?
Through, I had good teachers too. You know, I can remember all the way back to my fifth grade teacher, my history teacher who carried on to my sixth grade year as well, got me really interested in history and all through junior high and high school. And I had a lot of coaches like everyone does. I was lucky, at least everyone here in Texas, I don't know where everyone else, but in Texas, most all the history teachers are coaches. I lucked out though and had some really good ones. You know, you always hear about the terrible coaching teachers who don't care about it and they just teach history because it's easier. But I had a lot of really good ones and it continued to foster my interest in history. I had a cousin I was really close to, the son of my aunt and uncle, who was also really into history. So I don't know. It just always was a part of something that I was drawn to.
Okay. Why do you think, you know, as you're teaching now and maybe just your experiences growing up, why do you think that so many students and maybe even just people in general have trouble understanding or caring much about history? I know history was always kind of that blow-off class for a lot of my friends.
Yeah. Excuse me. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think part of it is a lot of teachers don't teach it very well, and not necessarily that's not really an indictment on the teachers themselves, but the way grade school typically structures history, at least junior high and high school anyway, it structures it in a very old school way that focuses very heavily on facts, memorizing people and dates and times and stuff that, generally speaking, most people don't find that interesting. So I think a lot of students get to, at least from my experience, a lot of students get to college and they kind of anticipate it being the same thing. And then they go into it thinking this is going to be really boring.
Mm-hmm.
A big part of what I try to do is to do my classes in a very story style format. So I'm telling stories the whole time, stories about people, about events. I talk about economics and deep stuff like that too. But I try to focus around the narrative elements of it. And I think lots of people respond to that much more than before. And one of the biggest things, one of the most interesting things that I think I find is that younger students or older students will often tell me, I really hated history in high school, but it's actually pretty interesting here. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is really just simply reformatting it towards something that's interesting. Because, I mean, everybody likes movies and everybody likes stories, whether they're reading or, I mean, even if you're watching sports, there's storylines, there's all kinds of things that draw people into to whatever they're interested in. And history's no different. The big difference, of course, is that I think history is also really important. I think that the way it's taught, the facts and the memorization, gives the impression that it's not important. And I think a lot of kids come out of high school, you know, and if I didn't have a family that was interested in history, I mean, there's no real – if no one tells you that it's important – and no one ever, you don't ever see that, then it's not important, really. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. And people look at the way it's portrayed. One of the other big problems, I think, with history is the way history is often used in the media and in politics. And you have a lot of history that's contested, which as historians in the academic field, all of it's contested all of the time, which is part of what we do. But a lot of that gets into the popular forum, or particularly in politics, and it gets misused and misrepresented in a way that makes history tell the same history tells different stories, and that gets abused. And I think people are turned off. You know, either it's boring or it seems like it's just irrelevant to their lives.
Well, and kind of what you're describing, it almost feels like a lot of teachers have probably taken an approach where they're teaching history from, if you're looking, thinking biblically, they're teaching it from a Chronicles perspective, whereas most people would much rather hear the history as a perspective from Samuel or 1st and 2nd Kings, where it's the stories versus these are the Chronicles of how many men David had in his army, you know, and you look at these, these numbers. So it is a very story-based idea, I think, that attracts people.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to put it. I think that's very much true. People get really tired of the, because if it's just details, it doesn't mean anything. If you just memorize a list of people who were the founding fathers, or you know what battles happened in World War II, none of that means anything to anybody. It's interesting maybe to some people, but it doesn't mean anything until you put it into a context of what people were doing, why they were doing it, what's the story that went along with that, and then it becomes a lot more becomes a lot more applicable to people's lives. I mean, you can see these people did these things, you know, George Washington, all the things they do around the Revolution and Constitutional Convention, none of that stuff means anything. It was just names on a paper. But if you talk about what his motivations were, why he wanted to do that, a little bit of background to his life, those kind of things, it makes it seem more relatable, I think. And if people can relate to the historical figure, then they can learn something from the story.
Makes sense. And you mentioned that history is often contested. We often hear history is told by the winners.
That's true.
The losers don't get much say in it. As a professor at a community college, or just colleges in general, since you've taught at several different colleges on different levels, what would you say, as students come into your classes, what are some of the biggest misconceptions students have had about historical events?
That's a tough call. One of the things that stands out, I mean, really just the idea that it's all irrelevant, I guess, is the biggest misconception. But more specifically, I guess, one of the things I think a lot of students don't understand is the complexity. It all seems very simple when you get out of high school. And, you know, a good example, talking about the Old West, for example. You know, there's a story that most people get when they're kids of cowboys and Indians. Cowboys, settlers pushing out into the plains, fighting the Indians. And maybe you get a little bit of both sides. You get, you know, the cowboys are being killed by the Indians. And you also get the other side of that, you know, settlers and cowboys destroying the Indians. But there's so much more complexity to it when you throw in things like the economy and railroads and Chinese immigrants and Mexican immigrants and all these other people groups, that there's a real deep complexity to all of these things that a lot of people just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Another good example, something like, you know, the founding fathers, for example. You know, politicians always like to say the founders would have liked this, or the founders didn't want this. But when you look at it, you realize all of those guys had pretty different ideas. Some of them very radically different ideas. Some of them would like the things we do today. Some of them would not like the things we do today. And it's a very wide variety, which people get upset about the complexity of today, or get upset. They get overwhelmed by the complexity of today. People say, oh, in the old days it was simple. It was easy back then. But it's the same. People are the same. You know, the surroundings change, but people's motivations and what they're trying to accomplish, that really doesn't change over time. And I think the complexity is a big part of it. There's lots of stories, elementary school stories, I think, that come around that people are confused about, that are more just funny. You know, things like believing that the old Columbus story, that that most everybody thought the Earth was flat, which, you know, in 1492, probably almost no one thought the Earth was flat. Plain and simple. The Greeks knew the Earth was round. The Romans knew it. It's not. It wasn't a surprise to anybody. People were scared to go because they didn't know what would happen. They might, you know, a sea monster might eat you up, was kind of the idea. But the idea of falling off the Earth, not realistic. Anyway, you get a lot of those kind of things that are just simple stories we get about, you know, the pilgrims, for example. And I don't know, teaching college history is fun in a lot of ways because a lot of what we do is trying to break down those molds that were created before, the pillars that were built up about the different figures in the past, and trying to humanize people. You know, it's guys like Benjamin Franklin. They're not superheroes. They're people just like us who did certain things. And, you know, when they're just a superhero, there's not really an applicable nature to it. It's hard to apply that, what their experiences to our lives. But when you realize they have the same kind of motivations we do, I think it becomes a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you do get a idea, whether it's through, you know, the actual classes in junior high and high school and so forth, or just American pop culture, that the founding fathers were a league of superhumans.
Yeah.
It's the Justice League of founding fathers or something, but you know, when you really do delve into it, they are all very complex individuals. You know, some of them had slaves, some of them didn't. Some of them were deists, some of them were not. You know, and to say that they're all one unified body fighting the evils of the British Empire is probably just a little bit of a misnomer.
Yeah. Well, and also looking at, in that same vein, looking at what Britain was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Were they the oppressive empire trying to take all of Americans' freedoms away, or were they just trying to pay off their debts?
You can't suggest that type of stuff on this podcast.
Okay.
Just kidding. We have a lot of listeners in the UK, so they'll be excited to hear a different perspective coming from the US.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's anyway, yeah, it's an interesting, I don't know. I find it fascinating, and I think a lot of people do, and I tend to, you know, I have a lot of students that, you know, obviously I have a lot of students that don't care when they get there and they still don't care when they leave. But I have enough anyway that seem like I've either caused them to be more interested in history, or in some cases to actually be interested in history,
mm-hmm,
in a way that they didn't really expect, because they assumed, again, they assumed dates and locations, and that's really going to be just a list of people and stuff. And, you know, get into my class and we talk about a lot of stuff. You know, it's a story. We talk about all kinds of different themes and people, and I try to bring in stuff that's not not common knowledge. So I don't know. I'm not trying to promote my class. All of us do the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's not unique to me.
Sure, sure. So, well, tell us about the podcast. Why did you start it? What is it about?
Well, I started listening to podcasts a long time ago. Right, I don't know when they started, but you know, a good 5 or 6 years ago, I found some different podcasts that I just thought it was an interesting idea, and I started listening to some. A lot of them tended to be like news radio shows that they would record and then put out as a podcast. And then my brother told me that his friend Trip Fuller, who we mentioned before, was starting a podcast, and I thought, well, that's interesting. So I started listening to it, and it's amazing podcast, Homebrewed Christianity. Everyone should listen to it. And it had a profound effect on me in a lot of ways. But related to podcasts, I just thought it was such an interesting idea of just getting together with someone that you're friends with and just talking about stuff in a humorous way, or however, you know, talk about deep things, talk about silly things. I don't know. It appealed to me. Part of that is I like to hear myself talk, which is part of the reason I'm a professor. So
I think all podcasters are that way.
That's part of it. You just want to hear yourself talk. So that's why we do it. But so I was talking to my friend Brad Folsom, who's a PhD student at UNT with me. And we talked for a while, you know, a year or two, kind of joked about the idea of starting a podcast. But we didn't really know what to do. And there's lots of history podcasts out there. There's lots of different things. And I was like, I don't want to just do something that everyone else is doing. I also didn't want to do something that was going to be extremely labor intensive because, again, we're working on our PhDs, so we don't really have time to dedicate too much time to research and putting together really deep shows and stuff. So we toyed with different ideas, and over last winter break, I guess it was, not this one, but the one before, I had this idea that Brad and I should do what we're good at, which is movies. One thing that we had always done, and, you know, getting to know each other at school, we're both incessant TV and movie watchers. So I thought, well, we should put the two together, history, TV, movies, put it together and do a podcast about that. I didn't even know if he was really how serious Brad was. But then when we got back to school, he told me he bought software and was basically ready to start recording. So I, okay. So anyway, the basic idea of what we do, so we have a website and we have a podcast. The podcast is dedicated really specifically to representations of history in popular culture, which is a fancy way of saying TV and movies, comic books, things like that. So what we do is we generally pick a movie or, again, TV series, whatever, and then we review it. We try to have guests most of the time. We try to get people who are specializing in that particular area. So sometimes it's me and Brad. Sometimes it includes someone else. Most everybody so far has just been other people at UNT, professors there, different people. But anyway, we just try to look at how that historical story is being represented. You know, we try to do it in a hopefully somewhat funny way, an entertaining way. We try to be – my kind of idea for the podcast is for academics, for it to be focused around academic historians, professionals, people with PhDs or working on PhDs or, you know, but professional historians, professors, but in a casual kind of, maybe not silly is the right word, but in a much more relaxed kind of way. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we just pick a movie and talk about it, really. Well, that's pretty much it. We just kind of sit down and go through what we liked about the movie, parts that we thought they did a good job representing history, ways in which they didn't do a good job representing history. And then we rate it at the end based on both entertainment and historical accuracy. The goal for me is hopefully for people who like history, people who like movies and watch history movies, to be able to watch that movie and then also get some easy feedback. I mean, you can do research on movies and you can try to find out what's accurate and what's not accurate. But, you know, it's kind of a one-stop way. Listen to the podcast. We'll tell you as much as we can anyway about what it was really like. We tell some of the stories. Sometimes we tell more stories than others, depending on how good the movie is. So that's the bulk of the podcast. We've done mostly movies. We did a couple of history movie face-offs where we did two different movies. The two main ones, we did the John Wayne Alamo versus the new 2004 Alamo. Mm-hmm. Kind of just compared those two versions of the Alamo. We did the New World with Colin Farrell and Batman, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I've gone blank on his name as well.
I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, that New World versus the Disney's Pocahontas, that was kind of more of a crazy one. But mm-hmm. We've done some TV shows, Boardwalk Empire, we did fairly recently. Our most recent one was the Bonnie and Clyde, the 2013 one just came out on, it was on History Channel, and it was a TV movie, but we did that. So we do have some comic books lined up we're going to do here pretty soon.
When you talk about those face-offs, do you think that some of the differences, like let's say you've got John Wayne's Alamo versus the most recent version, which what came out in
2004.
So do you think that some of the differences between those two are that historians have learned a lot more, or do you think that a lot of times it's just one director likes this take and the other director likes this take, kind of like the Batman series? They both have different takes. You know, all the different directors that have directed Batman all come at it with a different take or specific agenda.
Right. Well, there's a little bit of that. I mean, there's a lot of that. Obviously, director's take is a big part of it. Some of it is what we've learned. A lot of it, I think, is message. And, you know, when you talk about movies that are more close together time-wise when they're produced, then it's more just about take and what historians have learned. When you take ones that are that far apart, like The Two Alamos, 1960, John Wayne, 2004, there's a lot of other context to that. And one of the interesting things about that one, and I think that's our fourth or fifth most popular, most downloaded one. I think it's my favorite, though, still. We had a professor from UNT, Andrew Torgett, who did it with us, who was fantastic. But we really looked a lot, you know, the John Wayne one. There's this whole background context, because a lot of what the John Wayne movie was doing had a whole lot more to do with the Cold War than it had at all to do with the actual historical Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this kind of whole backstory where John Wayne's talking about freedom, and the story is told in a way where Mexico is almost irrelevant, and it's really John Wayne versus communism is really kind of what that movie is. And it's, you know, told in a Western way, versus the 2004 one, which was supposed to be more of a specifically historical epic, really tried to really tell this historical story and didn't have so much extra storyline. There's a little bit of context there because you have 9/11 a couple of years before that. So you could, I talked a little bit about comparisons of Santa Ana with, you know, Saddam Hussein and bin Laden and things like that. You can kind of see the super evil dictator in the 2004 one. But more that one was more just telling a historical story. Now, in the end, it's not as good of a movie, entertainment-wise, because the 2004 one gets muddled in trying to tell this long story and kind of loses any big message or big moment, whereas the John Wayne one, although it's widely inaccurate to the actual Alamo, it's a much more entertaining movie.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion, anyway.
Do you cringe or do you get excited when you see a movie that says based on historical events?
I get excited, and I'm different. I'm different than a lot of historians. And one thing that I find is a lot of historians really can't get past the historical inaccuracies. And one thing I talk a lot about on our podcast, and Brad's the same way, why we fit into this category. You know, I give a lot of leeway. I give Hollywood a lot of leeway with their historical retellings. And it doesn't really upset me when, you know, someone's in the wrong place, or, you know, the costumes aren't quite right, or, you know, these kind of small details that a lot of historians really get hung up on. Because one joke that you often hear is never go see a historical movie with a historian, because they're going to ruin it for you. But that, I don't feel like that applies to me. And I mean, I guess it kind of does, but
it's the dinner afterwards where you ruin it.
It's, yeah, exactly. It's after but even then, I give a lot of leeway because I recognize the art of movie, you know, and to me, it's not a documentary. And that's one thing that we talk about some of the podcasts. We don't do documentaries really, because that's something different. A documentary is designed to tell really the history in a more detailed format, therefore it should be very accurate. I honestly don't like watching documentaries that much, which is unusual, I think. But I mean, documentaries are good. If they're really good, I'll watch them. But for me, I like the movie. Even if it's a little less accurate, I don't know, the story, the drama, the art of it, I like that. So I'll give more leeway than a lot of people do, but I do think it's important I think it's interesting to look at how in which they represent history and also how they could have done it better. And one of the big things that Brad and I always harp on is that history itself is really interesting. And what a lot of movies do, I find, is they get in the way of themselves and they think, well, this history is not interesting in and of itself. So we have to make it interesting by doing extra stuff, which, you know, sometimes you have to add extra stuff to create a 2-hour storyline. But a lot of times you don't have to, you know. One of the complaints about the most recent Bonnie and Clyde movie is that in the crime spree, 1932 to 1934, where they have this 22-month crime spree, I think it is. In the movie, they just mixed all the events up, all out of order, which I think the main reason is they wanted to have Bonnie at all of the events rather than Clyde at half of them and then Bonnie and Clyde at half of them. They wanted both at every single event, which is okay, but a lot of it wasn't necessary. And that's kind of the thing. It's like historical inaccuracy, if you have to bend it a little to make it make sense or to tell a better story, I'm usually okay with that. But if you're just making things inaccurate and there's no reason, and in some cases it would be better if you just followed the historical story, that's when I get irritated.
Makes sense. Well, what movie or TV show do you think this may be something that you've already reviewed on the podcast or something that you've seen just and you haven't had a chance to review on the podcast? What movie or TV show do you think has done the best job in recreating their specific historical event?
I think that the most recent Lincoln movie did a really good job of replicating Lincoln and the debates over the 13th Amendment. There were weaknesses there, obviously, but I think comparatively that's still probably one of the most, I would argue, one of the most accurate movies that we've done. I think, I'm trying to think of some of the TV shows we've done. I can't think of a good TV show. I'll think of one in a minute, maybe.
Well, and while you're thinking of that, I thought one of the interesting things about Lincoln, and I saw it, I guess, after it had already come out and, you know, won the different awards and so forth, it was out on video. You know, everybody complained about Daniel Day-Lewis and his high-pitched voice because we have that Disney image of Lincoln, you know, with the animatronic, you know, with the real deep voice, right. 4 score and 7, you know, it was very deep. Whereas Daniel Day-Lewis realized, no, it's probably not historically accurate. That's probably not how he sounded. And I thought that was a really interesting thing that they pointed out and that most people, you just completely look over and people were, some people were very turned off by that, but that was probably the most historical accurate replication.
Yeah. We commented on that because that's an interesting thing that there was a lot of complaints about that, but the records of the time describe Lincoln as having a high pitched voice. Teddy Roosevelt's the same way, of having a really squeaky, almost squeaky high pitched voice. And Daniel Day-Lewis, one of the things that's interesting for that movie is he actually went, you know, he's all method actor, right? So he's super intense. He actually went to the area where Lincoln grew up, so kind of northern Kentucky, southern Illinois, and just lived with all these really old people from that era and really tried to mimic their accent, this kind of very specific accent for these people who, you know, generations who'd lived in the same area, which, you know, how exactly on it was, you know, there's no way we can know because we didn't have recording back then. Mm-hmm. But you know, from the descriptions of it, from the way in which he attempted to replicate it, it's pretty amazing. I thought he did a pretty amazing job. And just overall, the way they paced out the story, the way they told the arguments that you got in Congress, the other characters that were involved, it's just a really good movie. It's one of only a handful of ones that we did We do a five-point scale, and that's one of the few that we did 5 out of 5, I think, for historical accuracy.
Excellent. Well, I want to ask you this because I think it's a fun feature that you've done on the podcast. You've done a couple episodes where you've said if you could create a movie, a TV series, or a video game based on a historical period or a historical event, what would it be? And you and Brad have both come up with, was it 5 suggestions on each episode?
Yeah.
What's been your favorite idea to come out of that?
Oh, man.
And I'll let you pick your own if you'd like, but if you'd like to pick one of Brad's ideas, then you can do that as well.
No, his are all terrible. No, let me think about it. I'm trying to remember what we did. The video game was the most recent one we did. I really liked the my idea about the. Let me do 2. I really liked the idea about the filibusters. I had this idea of having a video game, kind of a grand strategy game, where you picked mid-19th century and you led invasions into other countries. And filibusters, nowadays most people when they hear the term filibuster, they think of the Senate and the way they hold up legislation. In the mid-19th century, and I don't know why it's the same word, honestly, it's very bizarre, but in the mid-19th century, filibusters, and even in the early 20th century, a filibuster was a private invasion of another country. Hmm. So a bunch of guys, you and I, for example, decide, hey, let's go invade Costa Rica and see if we can take it over. So we get some friends together, we get some guns, and we invade. And the goal usually in those cases was either to, some cases just to take control of it, most cases to ultimately annex it to the U.S. So these were kind of ways the U.S., some cases they supported them under the table, some cases not. Lots of countries did it, but in my vision of the game was the U.S. So the idea was you'd have kind of a grand map and you'd build resources and lead these expeditions into other countries and try to conquer and then ultimately try to build an American empire, but through this kind of underhanded means. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. We also had an idea about doing kind of like a first person or a third person kind of thing, like an LA noir or something where you go back and you do all the crimes of history. So like Jack the Ripper or people like that, where you kind of go and you try to solve those crimes in a way. I thought that was pretty interesting. I think my favorite movie ideas, I had one about, oh man, you really put me on the spot. I should have reviewed these. I had one about the Cortina War.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought would be a really interesting epic or a really interesting movie. Either you could do, so in 1859, you have something called the Cortina War, where a guy named Juan Cortina, who was Mexican, lived in what's now South Texas. After the U.S.-Mexican War, he lived in that part of South Texas that was Mexico, but then became part of Texas, that Texas had claimed, but Mexico had rejected. But after the war, 1848, becomes part of the U.S. So he's a U.S. citizen now, whether he likes it or not, basically. And there's a lot of historical debate over Juan Cortina as whether or not he was just a bandit in the traditional sense of someone just robbing and pillaging, or whether he was this kind of almost civil rights hero, where he's fighting for the rights of Mexicans, ethnic Mexicans in Texas, against an encroaching Anglo government that was, you know, taking land and moving in a much more negative direction. I kind of find him to be a little bit of both personally, but there's a great story between him and then a guy named, oh, I lost it. Oh, Ripford. There it is. Sorry, Ripford. So you have Ron Cortina and Juan Cortina, and then in Texas you have this guy named Rip Ford, who was a Texas Ranger, later serves in the Confederate Army, and is they have this kind of long-standing rivalry that starts with the first Cortina War in 59 and then carries on. There's a second Cortina War in the 1870s. But Cortina himself gets is not only involved in that, he also gets involved in fighting with the Union. So the Union, during the U.S. Civil War, the Union makes allies with Benito Juarez in Mexico and his people. Cortina sides with them for a while, while the Confederacy was working with the Emperor of Mexico, Maximilian, the Austrian Archduke. Anyway, the Borderlands area in that time period is absolutely insane in a lot of ways, and I think there's a lot of ideas. I think I had a TV show and a mm-hmm. movie idea about kind of following these storylines of guys like Cortina and Rip Ford and just all these other people that are involved in all the kind of chaos as nationalities are changed and different factions and two different civil wars happening at the same time and fighting with each other and against each other. And specifically Cortina and Rip Ford, there's all these crazy stories with that too, is that they're kind of these longstanding enemies. But there's a time during the Civil War in one case and after the Civil War in the other in which Rip Ford protects Juan Cortina's family. Juan Cortina gets in trouble in Mexico, and so Rip Ford protects his family, and vice versa. There's a time when right after the Civil War, Rip Ford's worried about his family, and they actually go down and stay in Mexico. It's kind of this weird, weird relationship that they have. That anyway, it's interesting. So I think I just rambled a whole bunch.
Oh, you're cool. You're cool. Well, and I think that those would I think those highlight how many different stories. That's the thing that I was fascinated about those ideas, as you talked about the different scenarios and different events and eras and so forth, is just how many stories you could really draw out of one specific event. So kind of like what you talked about with the Alamo and John Wayne, you know, you could tell that story so that it is almost, you know, America fighting communism, or you could take it, you know, the oppression of Mexico, or, you know, you could take it from a Mexican perspective. And so there's all these different perspectives that you could really draw out. And I think one of the TV shows that one of you mentioned, I can't remember if it was you or Brad, it talked about how you had five or six characters to start out with, and they were on different sides of World War II. And you followed them and tracked them kind of growing up. And, you know, one of them joined the war, and, you know, one of them joined at a different point, and just how at some, you know, different places they kind of cross paths. Yeah. And so you're tracking that and you're seeing it, and it really gives you, hey, there is really more than one perspective than the American perspective or than the British perspective. All these different lives were impacted by this one historical event, and they all were impacted and viewed it in completely different ways.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you look at it. I think one of the most interesting ones, I think this was one of the movie ones, Brad had the idea of there was an actual guy who was a Korean guy during World War II who was in the Korean army and then was drafted into the Japanese army, but then was captured and then ended up in the Soviet army, I think, and then eventually ended up in the American army. It was like this guy just somehow floated through all these different theaters and all these events, and this was a real story. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ideas was Brad to make a movie basically chronicling this, but it just, you know, there's so many crazy stories like that that I think there's so many possibilities. I think that if Hollywood or TV, HBO, whoever wants to do it, if they could take this history seriously, I think you can get some really amazing stories. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. And we talk a lot about HBO shows, and that's one thing that I think not on all their shows, but on a lot of their shows, HBO is somewhat unique in being able to take historical periods and creating amazing shows that are pretty true to the history, and they do a good job of staying together. I mean, usually they're fictional characters, but replicating history in a powerful way. You know, I think Deadwood's a good example, or Rome, Boardwalk Empire. There's some problems with that, but it they do a good job overall, I think, in a lot of ways, replicating the era. AMC's pretty good at it too, with some of the ones they do. Showtime less so.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Showtime, that's not quite HBO. That's what we always said growing up.
Poor man's HBO. Nah,
not really. Yeah.
It's just as expensive.
Yeah. Well, Cameron, we definitely appreciate the insight and appreciate the stories that you have to share. And I'm sure we could actually do several episodes and hopefully have you back on maybe to pick up some different historical events and get your perspective on them.
Sure.
Would love to hear a different perspective a lot of times than what we hear. So appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad I got the chance.
Any other closing thoughts?
Just check out the website. We got the podcast. We got a bunch of other stuff we do on the website that I didn't mention. So our Twitter, @HistoryBanter. We do a lot of links and images. We have a Facebook where we do the same stuff basically as on the Twitter, although less on the Facebook. But anyway, we're just trying to make history good quality history, but in a fun, entertaining way.
Excellent. HistoryBanter.com. And as you said, on Twitter @HistoryBanter and on Facebook. So we appreciate the time, and hopefully we can get you back on the show before too long and talk about some individual events as well.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. Well, have a great evening.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Thanks again for listening to this extended version of the Something Beautiful podcast, and thanks to Cameron for chatting with us. If you'd like more information about Cameron or the History Banter podcast, be sure to check out our website, somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. And we thank you for listening. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Have a great week.